This is Iconic.
Welcome to Iconic. We're here with the next installment of our look at Knight's Black Agents, Pelgrane's Spies versus Vampire game using the Gumshoe system.
So there's two other things. One is from Trail of Cthulhu. Mark, why don't you talk sources of stability and how those may be different from Trail of Cthulhu. And then Becca's going to explain a new mechanic that I love. It reminds me a lot of Cold City. I don't know if either of you guys have played or if anybody in who's listening has played that. Cold City was a Cold War role-playing game, a real small one. You had, and we're going to talk, Becca's going to talk about trust and betrayal. So Mark, take us away into sources of stability.
Yeah, so just like the Trail of Cthulhu, you have your sources that keep you sane. No sanity in Knight's Black Agents, but you have stability. And you can lose that. Again, especially if you're running, say, your burn mode and you're losing your humanity, what can I do to help keep that and keep me sane and kind of decompress from it? And there's three sources of stability. There's a symbol, which is a thing that you value, and it can't be a person. This is a non-human thing. Solace, which is a person that you use to take away the pain. It might be a significant other. It might be a relative. It might be a friend. Might be your mentor who trained you, and you go there and you kind of can decompress and let them know what's going on. And then there's safety, and that's the person or place that you would go to get away. And safety, a prime example in the Bond movie, I believe it was Skyfall, when he goes to Scotland and goes to the family home, he runs away to go there to get away from it. And it explains, just like it happened in the movie, the bad guys will probably discover you there and ruin your place of safety.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a place that you can get away to. Different than a safe house that you would set up somewhere. This is that one place somewhere distant that you can go to that's your safe haven, basically, temporarily anyway. So and there's rules in there that if you lose your symbol or your solace or your safety, you can lose stability.
Yeah.
You know, like, if your symbol is a crucifix and it comes out that something in the religion, you know, like, hey, the Pope is actually a vampire. Oh, my God, my whole basis of my faith. Boom, you're going to lose stability on that and go, well, OK, it would be earth shattering to you. That's right. Where you're going to lose a bunch of stability.
I mean, it fits in with the genre, right? Like, it fits in with how often do we see in spy movies where the hero loses their love interest, whether it's Angelina Jolie or, you know, what is it? In The Long Kiss Goodnight, Gina Davis's family is threatened. So that's what causes her to remember what's going on and go back into it. You have that moment where the hero goes back to the farm where their dad lives and tries to like sort things out, but they're attacked there and it gets blown up. Like, it gives you, as a director, which is the name for the GM in this game, I would say targets because I'm an evil person, but it gives you those moments. And don't go, I mean, if you're playing a long-term campaign, you don't go after these things to start. You let your players use them as written and develop a sense of safety there. And then when they really piss the vampires off, or when the heat rises above a certain level, again, let's go back to the first Mission Impossible movie. There's that great moment where the IMF guy says, listen, everybody has someone you can squeeze, find Ethan's. And so they televise the arrest of his mom and uncle for being drug kingpins. And that's what they use to lure him out, because that's his, you know, his solace is being taken away. And it provides motivation for your spies. Becca, you want to explain how trust and betrayal works? I picked you specifically to talk about this.
Mm-hmm. Because I've betrayed you.
That's right.
Or you've betrayed me.
Nope.
Mm. All right.
Curse you, sudden but inevitable betrayal.
So you start the game with 5 trust points. You look at your fellow agents, characters around the table, and you decide, who do you trust the most and who do you trust the least? The person you trust the most, you give 3 of your points to. The person you trust the least, you give 0 points to. And the remaining 2 trust tokens are divvied out among anyone else who is still there. As a result, so for example, my hacker implicitly trusts Mark's sniper. So I've given him 3 of my trust points. He can use those 3 points throughout the session to assist me because he has my trust. And so maybe that's he makes sure I have a good weapon in my hands before people break down the door, various things. He can give me essentially a bonus to my role, an additional one. And it kind of just shows how you guys work together. You cannot spend trust if you don't have any from the other person. So JM has given me zero trust. I cannot help him because he does not trust me to help him.
And Mark's character may be like, well, Becca's character trusts me, but I don't trust her. It does not have to be a two-way street. It can be a one-way street, which would make a very interesting group.
Mm-hmm. At the end of the session, you can reassign trust at one trust point between the other agents. So, for example, I trusted Mark with 3. I did not trust JM. But at the end of the game, JM's character has done something to inspire me to trust him. I can move one of my points from Mark to JM. And so you can kind of reassign as the game goes. And if, yeah, one of the other players is acting super sketchy, you can change your trust in them, which then comes to betrayal. Essentially, if you spend a trust point to hurt the other character, that is a betrayal. So, for example, I had at the end of the last session, so the beginning of this session, there's 2 points of trust to Mark and 1 point of trust to JM. And in the middle of the session, JM decides he's going to spend his 1 point of trust from me to make sure, like, essentially to push me out of cover to make sure I get shot or something.
Yeah. Or to make sure that I don't have to outrun the vampire. I just have to outrun Becca's character.
Right, exactly. So as long as he trips me, he survives. That would change the trust to betrayal. Yes, Mark?
Well, it's not always just harm. It's also to hamper. So JM's character, to use the book's example, Ivan Sikorsky, and you're hacking something into the FSB, and he surreptitiously goes, you know what? I'm going to use a point to unplug that computer to hamper your investigation. He's betrayed you and loses that trust.
So, yeah, and it comes down,
like, bang. But.
Yeah, if you're playing Wilderness of Mirrors, if you're playing mirror mode, I would probably steal something from. So I played this game, the Infinity role playing game, and they have a Wilderness of Mirrors setting in that as well. And so the way it works is everyone in Infinity is working for O12, but you're all coming from these other factions. And so when you get a mission for O12, your faction may say, cool, I also want you to do X, Y, and Z on this mission. And so if I was running a really long-term campaign of mirrors in Knights Black Agents, I would do the same thing. Yeah, you guys are all spies and you're all investigating vampires. But Mark's guy comes from G9. Yeah, if Becca's trying to hack into that, Mark may be like, no, there's no way I'm letting her get these secrets. I will spend a point of trust to make sure that this doesn't happen. Or when Becca's character is infiltrating a FSB site, maybe she's planting evidence and is actually betraying the trust of the character who got her into that facility. So there are ways for the GM, the director, to really, if the group wants that style of game, and that's something you really need to discuss at the start of the game. If the group wants to just be badass spies fighting vampires and they don't want a Wilderness of Mirrors, then make it clear that that's the kind of game you want to be running so that players understand that. All right. So up until now, we've kind of talked about how to make characters, but we're going to get into like the rules that make Knights Black Agents unique and interesting in the Gumshoe system. So the big one is there are combats and chases in Trail of Cthulhu. We covered those. But in Knights Black Agents, there are thrilling chases and thrilling combats. Mark, do you want to talk about how those are different and what's really cool? So this goes all the way back to when I was running a game of Shadowrun for Mark. I would just be like Mark knows the combat system of the game, so I'm going to rely on Mark for a lot of this. Mark enjoys looking at the tactical rules of a game. So Mark, from your opinion, what do you think about the rules for chases and combats in Knights Black Agents?
I do like them. In the book, you have to remember chases don't use set distances. Typically, you go from 0 to 10 for a typical chase, and you start at 5. And if you're the pursuer, you want to get it down to zero and catch them. Mm-hmm. And if you're fleeing, you want to get it to 10. But the director could say, you know what? There's some circumstances here. And the example the book uses is great. You're in a Middle Eastern bazaar and it's a foot chase. I'm going to make it 6 because it's going to be much easier for them to escape. So we'll start at 3 and it'll be a much quicker chase. Get to 6 or get to 0 because of the circumstances. It's just not an open road versus we're going across the desert. Well, you know what? It might be a 15 because this is going to be really hard to lose them in the desert.
That's right.
Or there's drones or helicopters following you. So you can set the difficulties. That's just the default setting is 0 to 10. And again, you use your general abilities, driving, piloting, or athletics. Athletics would be a foot chase. Driving is your wheeled vehicles driving around. Piloting is boats and planes. Depending on how fantastic it could go from foot chase to boats to whatever, you know, as you change modes of transport. And if you're doing the foot chase, you can get into parkour and some other things. And there's rules of your carry. If you have enough athletics as you're jumping across, you've seen that in movies where you're running and all of a sudden this guy leaps and jumps and he's over the building and the guy looks up. He's like, how the heck did he do that?
The opening of Casino Royale, where they have the parkour chase where Bond is trying to catch this guy and he's leading him through the construction site. And it was just.
Yes. And Bond is obviously not as well trained.
Not at all.
And yeah.
Gets in the bulldozer and just gives up and starts bulldozing his way through the construction site.
Yeah. Yeah. So you have it and you'll make your rolls to see if you can increase it. Sometimes they stay the same. There's different things people can do to help or hinder if you like shoot out tires or do stuff like that. And it's not combat. You can't do combat until you get really close. Mm-hmm. Especially if you want to do like melee combat, like I'm going to leap from my car to their car and do something, you know, hand to hand or weapons. The lead's going to be like 1 or 2. Gonna be very close to do that. So yeah, and it should be, you know, think of the Bourne chase when he's in his little Mini Cooper down the steps and all that. So I would suggest if you're gonna have a chase in Bucharest, look at Google Earth and lay out some streets and go, hey, you know what? I think we can do this, even if you realistically couldn't, but this looks really cool. We can do this. Again, the driver is doing the piloting, but people in the car, say your group's in the car. James making a note, look at Google Earth for Bucharest.
No, I just got my opening scene planned, thanks to you, Mark. Okay.
Yeah, in Media Res, you're going to start right with a chase.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's where we're going to start.
That's perfect. But other people in the car can do things. Say, like, Becca's our hacker. And we'll say, you know, maybe if Rook is playing, Rook is the driver. I'm going to try to shoot some tires, and Becca's going to hack the traffic system to open the lights so we can get through and maybe close the lights on them. And she can also pull up a map to say, hey, turn left here, because she can lay out where we're going to go. So she can assist and give bonuses as we're doing these to increase the lead to finally get away, which is pretty cool. I like it. And it has a little chart. Like you said, the map, you kind of just track along where people are and if they catch you or don't catch you. And just because they catch you doesn't mean it's the end of the world, because, you know, then it has to be the rescue scene.
Yeah, they really expanded the rules, but not in an overly clunky way, if that makes sense. They gave it more options to allow the game to still be fast and quick, but make it a little bit more exciting. And they did the same thing with combat.
So then you have thriller combat, if you happen to get into the combat part. One of the things, they added some stuff, and it's not just, okay, I shoot, you shoot. There's some special rules. There's an auto fire, which would increase the damage against targets. There's called shot, and that's where you get into, you know, you want to shoot him in the head. I want to shoot him in the hand to knock the gun away because he has a hostage, and I want to rescue the hostage type thing. And again, there's specific rules and penalties to change the difficulty for those for the director. There's martial arts, where instead of just getting in a fist fight in the bar, you know, become Jackie Chan and can do fantastic things. And again, it gives you bonuses for your fight ability. JM's favorite, mook shielding. You get a meat shield, but you have to have a high enough ability to do that. And you can pull a mook, you know, the enemy minion, or if you're really dark, just a random person on the street to be your meat shield, which would be very dark and get you. If I was a director, I'd say, you know what? You can do that, but you're going to lose a bunch of stability because you just wasted a human life. Minions are disposable. They're okay.
Or
I still maybe lose one or two, but if you take a random granny on the street and pull her in front of you to stop bullets, wow, that's a dark game.
Yeah, that would definitely increase the heat in my game. Yes.
I was going to mention, that's another good movie.
Oh, Heat. Yeah, that's another great. Or Ronin. That's another one that we could.
Yes, Ronin is very good on how operatives work. I don't know if it fits exact genre, but how that works, how they get their networking going, how they get stuff and put the team together, and how De Niro doesn't trust these people because I don't know you from Adam.
Yeah.
And they're all thrown together to go do this mission. And you're like, what? They're all working for different people. Mm-hmm. That's a very good movie for that. There's suppressive fire. You're trying to get away. I'm just going to stay behind and lay down suppressive fire. If you keep them at bay, and then there's penalties that they want to advance through it, which no sane person would do. And there's some stuff they talk about in the book of why someone would.
Right.
And then there's the techno thriller monologue. That's my favorite, where you go, you know what? You get a 3-point refresh on your skill. You're like, you know what? I've got my PEC 4-0 down my M4, and I lay it on his forehead, and you just lay out this techno babble of what you're using to make something happen, and you get a refresh on your skill pool.
So, and Beck, I'm going to ask you what your favorite part of combat and chases are here in a second, but it makes me think, just the techno thriller monologue makes me think I could run a really great Star Trek game in Gumshoe, where when something goes bad, the engineer just starts rambling off all of the pseudoscience techno jargon and gets a refresh on their pool to make the repair on the warp core. That's kind of where my mind went as we were running through this. So, Becca, you've run chases and combat in Trail of Cthulhu. Anything you want to add to kind of like how this differs from what you had prepared? Do you like all of the new rules? Are you excited to try them out? What's something that kind of stood out to you?
The thriller combat is pretty cool. It's much more... Well, I was going to say it was much more involved than Trail of Cthulhu, but the players that I had for Trail of Cthulhu were willing to do more than just I stand and shoot.
Mm-hmm.
There was... holding it, yeah, grappling the night horror or the haunted horror. There was trying to shine lights, looking for torches or flashlights. And so, yeah, like the group that I had turned the combat into a thrilling combat. I will say the thriller chase scene rules in Night's Black Agent actually much more aligned with Call of Cthulhu's chase rules.
Mm-hmm.
Then Trail of Cthulhu, there weren't as many chase rules in Trail of Cthulhu that I remember.
Yeah.
But very much like Call of Cthulhu.
The positioning and yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I like that they took something that is very interactive in other games and are fitting it into their game in a interactive way.
Well, we've got just a couple more things in the blue section. The our side or the Venus section. One of these is heat and how it works. And what I love about this is as I was reading through the heat section, I was thinking back to Becca's group and going, man, if Becca ran this game for that group, the heat would be so incredibly high. And basically, it is a list of actions that increase the heat. And heat affects difficulty. It affects how much the local agents are following you. There's ways to decrease heat. Changing jurisdictions helps with that. But it's basically a marker of spies are supposed to be sneaky. So when you do something flashy, when you grab the old granny, I hate that this is the example that we're using it to use as a mook shield. When you blow up public property, even if that's what the mission required, the local law enforcement suddenly is tracking you because they don't care who you are. They just know you've done this thing. So it works out really well. It then forces the players to use covers, to use networking, to lower the heat or to get out. Out of the area that they've just caused this dust up. So it's sort of a realistic look at when Bourne is driving through the streets in his, you know, Mini Coupe like a crazy person. The local law enforcement doesn't just sit around waiting for him to stop. They're like, there is a car chase going on in Bucharest. This is illegal. We need to stop it. So I really like that. They've got the spy tech section, which is everything you would ever want from a Mission Impossible or a Q workshop. Not the dice company, but Q from Bond.
Just something that goes through my head, and I've seen it in books and movies. Bourne does certain things, or take whatever story you like, and you would expect, oh, there's a gunfight in Central Park. It should be all over the news. When it doesn't appear in the news, you should go, somebody's covering this up and toning down the heat. It wasn't me.
Yeah,
I didn't go to my handler and going, hey, you need to divert this and say it was a mugging. Somebody else is doing it. So that should be another clue, another link in your chain of what's going on. Again, you're going to get a lot of information, but you have to figure out what's going on. And if something happens, as players, as an advice, if the heat gets turned down and it wasn't you, who's covering it up and why? Because they don't want it out in the open. Remember, this is all, they want to remain anonymous just like you do. So yeah, try to keep things down.
And the higher the heat goes, the harder it becomes to take specific actions with your general abilities. It's harder to sneak past custom checkpoints when the heat is so high because they're on the lookout for people who have done spy type things.
Yeah. Or inversely, you're very quiet. I haven't done anything. There's no public shootings. There's no big chases. And suddenly the police start chasing me. Why is that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, somebody's turning the heat up over here by falsely accusing you of something. Hey, what's going on? Like, they use the heat, like the example you used when they arrested his parents for drug smuggling. They didn't go in and they could have killed them. No, they're just showing we have power over you. And they've turned. So it tells you that somebody that's in this involved in the government. Yeah. That doesn't happen randomly.
So. Yeah.
You can use heat lots of different ways.
Yeah. It is a pretty flexible and very interesting mechanic for the GM to use to represent this sort of spy genre.
Yeah.
And then rounding out the player section, you have a ton of special tactics. We're going to talk about two of them. Mark, you want to go over the two you talked about? And then we'll talk about kind of what it was like to read through this. And as players, what are we most excited about for Knights Black Agents?
Yes, they have the TFFBs, the Tactical Fact-Finding Benefits. So there's a couple things. There's also a TTTB. But there are special things you get to do. One of them is your training flashbacks, which this is for the director to help hand out some stuff where, you know, in that story where he's either, you know, the dream montage or something where the guy, everything goes fuzzy and he has this flashback from training and it helps explain something and can give more information to the situation you're doing. Like you should know this without knowing. It's like the director saying, hey, you know how to do this and you can do it by, you have a training flashback. So you can kind of do a little descriptive thing of why you do know this. Oh, okay. And you remember sitting in that boring class with Dr., you know, Ivan Sikorsky, I like that name, is giving you a briefing on something. And you're like, hey, wait a minute. He mentioned that. And that's that training flashback to give you some information. Another one is tag team tactics. And that's, here's an example. Becca trusts me at 3. I trust her back at 3. Why? We've worked together on operations before and we've built a rapport where she knows this is what I do. I know what she does. And you have to have that. If there's zero trust, like her to JM, they can't tag team on anything because she doesn't trust him until they build it, until he does something like, okay, you've got a point now. We've worked together. Okay, I can trust him on stuff. And you have to have that rapport with someone to get the tag team. And like, and as an example, I'm a sniper. She's a hacker. She pulls up building schematics and does this little 3D model and goes, you know what? Go over to that building 2 blocks away and the height is perfect for the angle that you want for your trajectory. And that's where you can set up your sniper nest without me climbing every building to look at it. And then I get a benefit from it.
Yeah.
And that's that tag team tactics that we can use as a benefit that works really good for someone like, yo, I'm not a combat person. Okay, I'm going to shut down. No, wait a minute. We can tag team this. She can use her skills in the safety of, you know, the minivan parked down the street with U-Haul on it so no one bothers it. And she can say, hey, this is what you need to do. You know, flying back to our Shadowrun days where the hacker always tried to be in a secure room, bomb-proof.
That's right. So they couldn't go anywhere.
Don't do anything. But they can help each other and they have specific rules for it instead of coming up for it, which is pretty cool.
So as players, what are you guys most excited about seeing in a Knights Black Agents one shot or campaign if we were going to play a longer term game of this?
I don't know. Just the whole I like the whole idea of being that international spy and traveling around, and vampires are scary. If you don't want to do that, you can do the other one. But just that whole working together to do stuff and, you know, being that Jason Bourne without everyone immediately wanting you dead at first, and all the, you know, the techno stuff. I get into that kind of crunch, getting out your character.
Right. Who doesn't want to be a spy? Like, yeah, I think that's something that everybody kind of wants whenever they watch one of those movies or shows or something. It's that, ooh, I could do that. I could disguise myself like that. I could sneak over there. I could do that. And so having a game that says, yes, yes, you can. And not only can you, but you rock at it is fun.
Yep.
Yeah.
We'll be back in 2 weeks when we continue our look at Knight's Black Agents, the core rules for spies versus vampires using the gumshoe system.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast.
You've been listening to the Iconic Podcast. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com. Also, check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and more information about the show. Thanks for listening.